We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
She's been at the helm of one of this region's most beloved family destinations since its doors first opened 40 years ago. I'm Megan Lynch. I'll introduce you to Elizabeth Fitzgerald, president of the Magic House.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
I'm Megan Lynch. The Magic House in Kirkwood, Missouri, first opened its doors in 1979. One woman has guided the museum since the first children started exploring its wonders, and that's Beth Fitzgerald.
Let's talk about how you came to be part of the Magic House and your background. I understand your background is in education and, right. and early childhood development.
Yes, that's right. Actually, I had been working for St. Louis County prior to the time I was at the Magic House, doing children's programming at Queenie Park primarily. And the two founders of the Magic House, Jody Newman and Barbie Freund, had had children coming to some of those programs and seen all the publicity that we were getting. And so one day they just reached out to me and asked if I would meet with them. And so the idea for a children's museum was really intriguing to me. I had always wanted to be in the classroom, but when I graduated from college, they were really laying off even tenured teachers. That was in 77. And so, the idea about being able to combine my love of children and what I had found when I was working for the Parks Department is I did love the public aspect of that, you know, versus being in a classroom. I did enjoy meeting new people and working with new children. And so it did seem like the perfect combination for me to be able to be in a museum that had an education background, but also to be able to be working in a public venue. So they invited me to come meet with them. The house was almost done, and I just fell in love with it. And so as it turns out, I'm the only person they interviewed, and it's been such a blessing in my life that they took the time to meet with me that one day. And so they hired me unofficially about 6 months before the museum opened, and then I really didn't start until a couple weeks before the grand opening because they had run out of money. And that was part of the story to me. And I think why they were willing to hire somebody just basically right out of college is that they said, you know, we hope we can pay you. You know, it just kind of depends on how many people come. But because I was so young, it wasn't that big of a risk to me either. And as we found out, the very first day there were long lines of families waiting to visit the Magic House. And ever since that day, you know, we've been having wonderful response from the community.
What's it been like for you to have that longevity in one place? Because really today, that's unheard of for someone to have been with an institution for four decades.
And I think because the Magic House has changed and evolved, it really isn't the same job now that I had 40 years ago. You know, the museum has grown a lot in terms of its complexity as well as its square footage. And so every year has been a new challenge for me. And I think the founders were very committed to the museum continuing to evolve. You know, they had given me a business plan that they had created that every year you need to do something new, every 3 years you need to do something big, and every 5 to 10 years you need to do something very major, because they wanted the museum to stay fresh and they wanted it to be responsive to changes in the community. And I think, you know, at that point, I didn't really understand what wonderful advice that was. But as you said, it was not only great for the Magic House, but great for me because my role here changed and evolved as the organization grew too.
As I was talking with someone about sitting down with you, we were saying in the time you've been here, you've probably gotten to the point now where some of the first kids who may have visited in, you know, 1979, maybe bringing their own children back to experience the Magic House.
It is so wonderful to see that we're having a second generation of families. And, you know, even grandparents are a pretty big audience for us right now. And they feel a real connection to the Magic House because they brought their children here and they've seen the Magic House change. And they're so happy to be back with us now with their grandchildren. And actually, one of our board chairs, a board member who's been on our board for over 10 years, was a student at Nifer Middle School when we opened. And so it's a great story for him to tell that he's been involved with the Magic House the whole 40 years, because then he had his children and now they're grown. And one of his daughters is a teacher who brings her children back here as students. So it is great to see all those family memories. And I know our staff says sometimes we are a little nervous about saying we work at the Magic House, because as soon as we do, people just, their faces light up and they want to, you know, they want to share stories. And it is just so wonderful to see that the community cares about the Magic House so much.
Well, I solicited some questions from some kids I know, and one of the first things they wanted to know is, why was it named the Magic House instead of like the Education House, right, or the Learning, right, House?
Yeah, I think our founders were really brilliant in that regard too, because at the time there weren't very many children's museums around. And a lot of the children's museums at that time were more like collections of toys. And they wanted it to be so hands-on. They had children in elementary school themselves. The movement about hands-on learning was really taking off in the museum world, but mostly in science centers. And they wanted the Magic House to be broader than a science center. And so they decided that the house itself looked so magical to them that they would use the house as the name. And so that's kind of defined who we are, because as we've grown and changed, we've tried to keep that same feel. And one of the reasons they loved the house idea too is that they had taken their children to visit other children's museums, other science centers during their development. And what they found is that children, their children, seemed to be behaving better and be more focused in the children's museums that were in Victorian houses, which is the way Indianapolis Children's Museum started and Boston Children's Museum started. So kind of interesting that a lot of the children's museums started in Victorian-style homes. And I think that's still right. You know, we today still try to create, even if we create a big room, smaller spaces within that room so that children don't feel like they want to run. And also that they don't see what's around the corner exactly, so they can be more focused at where they are that moment.
Let's talk about that original Victorian house. As I was driving by today to come park, I thought, I need to focus and see if I can figure out which part of it is. And if I'm correct, it's as you face the front, it's the portion on the right. Is that, uh-huh, did I get it right? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, it was a beautiful home and it was a historic home. I know sometimes children want to know who lived in the Magic House. And the A.G. Edwards family built the house in 1901, right prior to the World's Fair. And they were very involved with the World's Fair. So it's a good story for us to tell, too, in terms of how the Magic House actual building came to be. But, yeah, we've kind of grown around it, so it's still the front of the building and is still an important part of the experience. You know, we celebrate our 40th anniversary with the staff who had worked here over the 40 years. We sent out kind of like an all call so we could get staff from all the different eras. And, you know, that original house still holds a lot of memories. And especially, like you were saying, for the second generation of families coming back, they still want to do the Van de Graaff generator that stands your hair on end and the slide and the shadow walls. And some of those original exhibits are still here.
For you leading the transformation, you were talking about those benchmarks and doing something major. And one of the major things has been the incredible expansion. What about just the nuts and bolts of overseeing how do we take the frame of an old Victorian home, make sure that it is stable to add all this stuff on, and find the right people to do the work to expand from, what was it, 5,000 square feet to what?
55,000, yeah. 5,500 to 55,000. So, yeah, that is a good story. And, you know, I think that the architects who have worked on this project have been thrilled to do that because it is such a different kind of commercial space than they usually get to create, with a lot of intricacies. And at one point, the expansion that we did that was completed 11 years ago, we weren't sure, you know, if we had the money to be able to put on something that looked that elaborate. And so the initial drawings were pretty much putting just a box on the side of the original house. And I showed it to one of our board members who I really value in terms of their guidance. And he said, don't do that. The fun of the Magic House is the twists and turns and the intimate spaces. And every time I see him, I always tell him how thankful I am that he gave us that advice and that the board was willing to take the risk of doing a bigger capital campaign so that the house itself could still remain that beautiful architecture.
You're listening to Beth Fitzgerald, president of the Magic House. When we return, learn more about the experience inside this children's museum.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome back. I'm Megan Lynch with Beth Fitzgerald, president of the Magic House.
You mentioned to me this idea of kids being in smaller spaces and being able to maybe look around a corner and see what's next instead of seeing it all at once. What's that do in a child's mind or for their learning experience?
Well, I think we're all well aware of how children's attention spans can be relatively short. And so, you know, whatever we can do to help them focus, I think is very important. I think the Magic House, we are very respectful of children and how they learn, and we feel like they are capable of learning things very deeply, but you have to put them in a situation where they can be successful. And so I think that's what has been our goal, is that they're just so excited to be here, especially children that are here for the first time, that we want to help them be able to have good behavior and to really delve in and be able to focus on something before, you know, they're just so excited that they want to see the next thing.
What's the value or in the enhancement for kids when they can be active in learning? You know, as an educator, what's that do for a kid if they're doing more than just sitting in a classroom?
I mean, there's lots of research to show that when children are actively involved with the learning process, it becomes much more embedded in their brain and in their learning. And, you know, being here, I can't say that I'm, you know, there's different types of learners, and I can't say that I am particularly a hands-on learner myself. I still like to read and learn from research, which has been an advantage because a lot of the work I've had to do here has been a lot of research. But I do think there's a whole lot of people in our world that learn kinesthetically. And, you know, they need to have movement be part of how they're processing information. But I do think just about everyone loves the opportunity to be self-directed learners and want to make the choices on their own. And I think that's also important in terms of what we're trying to do here. We are focused on hands-on learning, but it's the option of children to go where they want and make decisions where they want to spend their time that's important. I'm always thankful when I hear parents that are letting their child stay in a particular area for a long time, because parents, a lot of times when people say to me, how long will my child stay here? I'm like, it's really the parent's attention span that's the issue at the Magic House. It's not how long the child can stand, you know, being here, because they want to be here forever and ever. My office is close to the exit, and so pretty much all day long we hear 2 and 3 year olds throwing temper tantrums because they don't want to leave. But I do think that, you know, overall, the opportunity here, what we've tried to is create an opportunity for pretend play and for children to be able to take on the role of adults in their community. And it's amazing if you look at the children, because mostly they're pretty serious, you know, and a lot of times people will talk of the Magic House as a fun place to be, and it is, and it's, you know, all about play, and it is. But when the children are here, they're pretty much focused on playing out the roles that they see around them. And what we're trying to do is encourage them to think about their future, especially children who may not have that opportunity at home. to have parents who are giving them a lot of direction about thinking about their future. We want to give those children a chance to explore that and to think about that and how that's going to impact their future.
My kids wanted to know the Children's Village. Is it one of the original exhibits or was it added later?
It was added later. So the original house ends where... right now, it would be before you get to WonderWorks, our early childhood space. So the first edition was our early childhood space. The original house was geared for elementary age children. And very quickly, we found that families wanted something for preschoolers as well. And so that was the first edition that we put on, and that was in 84. Then we added a whole new audience. And at the time, as I mentioned, we had been pretty crowded when we first opened. And we thought we'd add this expansion. We went from about 5,500 to about 12,000 square feet. We thought that would solve our problems. But we weren't thinking that we were adding a whole new audience. So it actually exasperated our attendance. And so, the board did make plans then in the early 90s to do a campaign that would dramatically expand the museum. So we went from about 12,000 to 25,000 square feet. And that's the expansion that the Children's Village is in.
We love that space. And it's right, as you were saying, kids are very serious about it. And what I find so fascinating about that area of the museum in particular is how the kids interact with kids they've never met before.
I know. It is one of the things that I love most. And I do remember one of our board members was a single dad with one daughter. And when he asked her, what's your favorite thing about the Magic House? Why do you like coming here so much? And she said, because I have friends. And that has always warmed my heart so much. And you see it with children from different cultures, different parts of our city, tourists versus children that live in St. Louis. And they're all working together so collaboratively. It is wonderful to see. And I do think, even though a lot of things have changed in children's lives over the last 40 years, I think the way children play together is still very, very similar.
How do you find vendors or designers that can come in and create these spaces, make them durable, because they get a lot of hands-on, on your displays and your demos? That must take a lot of time to find the right people.
Well, and because of that, we do most of it in-house. I don't know if many people know that, but below the main level of where the Star Spangled Center is, mm-hmm. right below that is a giant exhibit fabrication workshop. So we have a whole team, and we're always working on a new project. It makes it a lot more cost efficient for us. There are times when we may have to bring in a vendor for a specific part of an exhibit. But for the most part, over the years, we've just found if we're using an outside vendor, they really don't understand what it means to have 600,000 visitors in a space that are that active, and with most of them being children. So it's really an important part of who we are. And when we did the latest expansion 11 years ago, that's when we put in that giant exhibit fabrication workshop. And we made a commitment that we would create our own traveling exhibits besides our own permanent exhibits. So that means we are always in production with an exhibit that will be here first, but that will start traveling the country then and going to other children's museums. And we bring in children's museums exhibits from other parts of the country as well. So it's Children's Museum Field has a nice kind of reciprocity situation. It's a good earned income source for us as well, because you get to rent them out. But it has been something that's been invigorating to us too. One of the newest areas for our exhibit development is around cultural exhibits. So we started off doing a children's China exhibit about 5 years ago. That was part of a national grant program through the Association of Children's Museums. We did a strategic planning process with the community right after that. And we were really thrilled that the community said to us, this is what we want you to do. You need to do more cultural exhibits. St. Louis is becoming a much more diverse community. The children of today are definitely living in a global society. society, that's what we need to be preparing children for. And so since then, we did an exhibit with Kenya's Kids. We just opened Argentina's Niños in November. And next month, we're starting a new exhibit on India. So there's always something in the pipeline that we're working on. Right now, our team is developing a new train exhibit. We've seen kids. We just had Thomas here last fall. We had another exhibit about trains. We thought we need to have trains. We're in Kirkwood. It's really a train community. We've had the Canfield Station that is model trains, but not a chance where children can really pretend to be driving a train, and we're going to have train tables. So that's under construction right now.
I'm Megan Lynch with Beth Fitzgerald, president of the Magic House in Kirkwood. When we come back, we'll tell you how this children's museum is branching out into St. Louis City.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
I'm Megan Lynch. This hour I'm talking with Beth Fitzgerald, who's led the Magic House Children's Museum for 4 decades, including the recent expansion into a satellite location in St. Louis. It's called the Magic House at MADE.
We have grown this space about as large as it can be, our current space in Kirkwood. And so it kind of made sense for us to be looking out into the community to find another location. And we ended up very fortunate. One of our board members knew that Cortex had a commitment to create a makerspace for children in the city of St. Louis. And that's not their business. And so we formed a partnership to look for a site in the city where Cortex could have an important role to play, but the actual facilitation, development, and implementation would come from the Magic House. And we looked at several different sites, and then we found out about, Tech Shop was a part of Cortex, and they went bankrupt right in the midst of our search. And Jim McKelvey was taken with this idea of Tech Shop and their goals. And so he and Cortex entered into a partnership to find a new location for the Tech Shop equipment offsite of Cortex in an area on Del Mar close to Third Degree Glass Factory, which he started. So, and as things go, Anna McKelvey, Jim's wife, had just joined our board. So there was just this kind of immediate synergy that developed between us to create this kind of three-part partnership to be able to open a space that the Magic House would be responsible for adjacent or across the street from Third Degree Glass Factory in an area of Del Mar that it's literally on the Del Mar Divide. And I think it was a philosophical decision on the Magic House's part, on our board's part, to be there. And it's a beautiful part of the city. And we are so thrilled to be there. The neighborhood couldn't have been more welcoming to us. We've created great partnerships in that community. And as you said, I think families throughout the region have come across it and have enjoyed it. So it's bringing children from the suburbs to the city to be in the same space with children from the neighborhood who have come to love the space too. So we're really pleased. I mean, it was a big, risky decision for our board to make. And we opened it in June. I had a great response to our summer camp program, great response from summer camps outside of, in that area, bringing their children there. And this year, in terms of our school groups, we reached out to a lot more charter schools. Schools immediately around made. Hamilton Elementary is the closest elementary school, and we're in a deep relationship with them this school year. But every day our field trips are full. So we have been so thrilled to see that in the last 6 months we've really been able to accomplish what we had hoped to do.
For people who may not be familiar, it's not exactly the same Magic House experience there. It's got a little bit different mission. Describe for us that space, because it is more of an open space and it's more just raw creativity, it would seem.
Yes. And what we wanted to do is create a space for a little bit older child. You know, the Magic House is primarily for preschool and elementary students. There was an interest in this whole concept about making, which is what MADE stands for, is makers, artists, designers, and entrepreneurs. So we wanted to be able to really focus on middle school students in that neighborhood and invite them to be able to come to the Magic House after school and really start to develop those skills and passions for art or making that might help them when they're deciding what they want to do in high school. But the space is much more, you know, where the Magic House is a kind of Victorian house look, this is a much more industrial look. And it is a nice open space. It's all brick. You know, it was originally a car dealership. And so I think it has a little bit more architectural integrity to it than maybe just a plain old warehouse. It has big windows. It has a skylight. So it's truly a beautiful space. When we first saw it, there were no windows in. The ceiling was falling apart. It was full of big puddles. So Jim McKelvey and his team did a great job renovating that building for us. But what we did do, in going back to our original philosophy about keeping spaces contained, is that the space is divided up by giant Lego bricks. And so it gives us a chance to kind of create more intimate spaces, keep children from running, and also give us the flexibility because they're not real walls. I mean, we could have put in real walls, but we decided to go with the Lego walls because it goes with the philosophy, too, of the space. And we do have giant Legos there that children can build with themselves. But we also wanted the flexibility that if we want to bring in one of our traveling exhibits, you know, those Lego walls just disappear. Or if we decide that there's a different configuration that we would like to explore, they're just gone. So we tried to look at dividing up the space. Like, we have those giant Lego tables. They also act as a way of containing the space. So part of what we are interested in is how the environment does impact behavior and how you can arrange environments to elicit the behavior that you're hoping for.
For you personally, how do you keep your passion for this year after year with, I'm sure, the multitude of administrative duties that you have? You know, how do you keep focused on, you know, the kids or why we're doing it, but we've got all these things we have to accomplish?
Yeah, and it is an interesting balancing act, and but it is one I've enjoyed. And I do feel bad for the person who takes my position when I retire, because I've been able to grow my skill set at the same time the organization has grown. We have a lot of longevity on our staff. Our COO has been here for 30 years. Our CFO has been here for 20 years. Because of that, the day-to-day responsibilities of running the Magic House don't need my intervention. And so it does give me more opportunity to think about the future and to think strategically about where we need to be as an organization and to be involved with the exhibit development too, because that is who we are. It's important, I think, for me to keep, you know, be really creative too, because I am a creative person as well, as I do enjoy the administrative side too, but of course the creativity is a big plus to this position. And so the opportunity to really think about where families are and where we want to evolve to make sure that we're meeting their needs is important. We have a wonderful education advisory committee that's made up of a lot of the top educators in St. Louis. So Dr. McCoy from Jennings, Sharonica Harden from U City. We have Paula Knight from the city school districts. We have a lot of the universities represented. They all love helping us too, because it's a little bit different than what they get to do every day. And so they are so thoughtful in helping us think what's coming up you know, where is the direction education is moving, that we want to make sure that we're there when those changes happen. And so staying on like the cutting edge of education, staying on the cutting edge of, you know, right now millennials are interacting a lot differently with their families than Generation X families do. So, you know, to meet the needs of those families and to make sure we're doing what they want us to do, you know, it's an exciting challenge, actually.
Describe that for me. What is the difference in the generations with how they approach what you do here and, you know, how they use what you have here?
Well, I think the Generation X families were more inclined to watch their children and to, you know, be close to them. They want to still make sure their children are safe, but to give them a little bit more space. The millennial families want to play with their kids. And they want to be, you know, doing things alongside them. And so that's how you may have seen how kind of our exhibits have evolving and why the space it made works well, too. If you go there, you'll see the adults are doing just as much as the children. And we've even had conversations that the adults are loving it so much. Should we be doing adult things there in the evenings? It's a little off mission for us. But there certainly seems to be an innate need of all humans to create things and make things. And with so much of our lives being digital right now, it does seem like something that's needed. And so we're trying to give millennial families more opportunities here. Like we have the STEAM Center that we opened last March with a science lab, and it's set up with a table with a science activity. And so the parents and the children are exploring that together. We have staff to help facilitate that. But it's not a situation where, you know, you would just expect a child to sit down and do that on their own. So it's those kind of changes that we're looking at making. And, you know, the founders did say to me early on, if the adults don't like being here, the children aren't going to come. So you have to make sure, even though it's a children's museum, that you're thinking about the adults who are bringing them as an important part of your audience as well. And so we've tried to do that in different ways over the years.
I don't know how many moms I've seen make pot holders.
Oh my gosh.
At Made. It's
so
hilarious.
Funny. I mean, it has become like the biggest joke for us because it seems like we could just make pot holders at Made and we would be successful. And it's been so fun from cross-generational perspective that, you know, moms want to share that with their children, our grandparents want to share it. And I think there's a sense when parents see it of a feeling that they're going back to their childhood and remembering things that were very important to them. And it's bringing out a little bit more emotion than you would think a potholder might do.
I know, because I think at first I think, well, I feel kind of guilty using these materials to make something for myself, but then it is very therapeutic sit there and mess with it.
Yeah. No, we are loving that part of, you know, the magic hasn't made because it is such a collaborative space. And we started a group called the Magic Moms at Made of moms in the neighborhood that could be advocates for us at their children's school and let us know when community events are taking place so we can make sure to be there. And what we decided the first night, it was called Wine, Clay, and Play. Huge success. We're like, maybe we should be doing this. Our young professionals had an event there that everyone enjoyed as well. But it does really bring you back to the main philosophy of the Magic House, that hands-on learning and interactive experiences are really important. And that as a society, we can't forget that. You know, we try to make sure that we have technology integrated into our exhibits. And there's members of our board who have felt like if we don't have quite a bit of technology here, children aren't going to want to come. It's just so important in their lives right now. Then we have another group of board members, more of our educators, who say children need some respite from that. They need a place to just play and be kids and, like you were saying, to meet other children and learn how to interact with other children. So we try to balance that. But I do think, especially at Made, you can see the impact that actually making something and creating something that's personally yours is so important to who we are.
What about for you? What do you feel like you have learned over this journey of being with the Magic House?
Well, I certainly have learned a lot about flexibility. And I would say risk-taking, educated risk-taking has been a big thing that, you know, we've just had to and our board has had to do it too, just take risks whenever you're doing a major expansion, or even taking out a beloved exhibit, like we took out our Waterworks exhibit. That was very much a favorite, but through the strategic planning process, we heard that the community wanted us to be a parenting resource, and that there's not places that parents can go a lot today if they're not living close to families, just to talk to an early childhood educator. And so we just opened that new space called Wonder Why the first of the year. And so, you know, we love change here. There's no doubt about it. It's inherent in our culture, but it's always on, you know, a little risky to do that. And so just being comfortable with that and, you know, trusting your gut and making sure that you're listening to the community and doing what they want you to do and hoping that it's all going to work out like it did at May too. You know, that was a pretty big risk.
That's Beth Fitzgerald, president of the Magic House. She gives us a tour next.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
This hour you've been listening to Beth Fitzgerald of the Magic House. I'm Megan Lynch. While I was there, we took some time to walk around the Children's Museum.
This is our math path, and for the moms of little ones, they love that they can count the steps forward and backwards. So you'll see all kinds of preschoolers counting the steps as they go up.
The colors, what I've always noticed about the Magic House, how important is that in learning, that things be bright and colorful?
Well, certainly something that we believe in. You know, the original Magic House, ironically, was designed in the late 70s. So everything at that point was orange and gold and, you know, like yellow. And so over time we've evolved to try to be a little bit more colorful. But we always look at the color palette early on in the design process. And, you know, we, like in this exhibit, when we redid the math path a few years ago, we decided to take an approach of everything being acrylic. And so, you know, part of it, to be honest, is what colors do acrylic come in? And then we have to look at that palette and decide what we're choosing through, and then, you know, match things to go with that. But we want to look up to date. I think that there was a time period when we were still using those harvest colors in the late 80s, when somebody said to us, I think it's time that you update your color scheme. So we do try to be aware of that. So this is our Children's Village space. And what we're trying to do here is have children have the opportunity, as we talked about earlier, to take on a role in an adult community. And so we've tried to infuse more STEM over the years. So we have a vet clinic where children, in terms of thinking about technology, they can sit down at a computer, see all different kinds of x-rays of animals, and trying to make an assessment of what the animal ate that was causing them problems. We have a children's hospital space where they can pretend to be a nurse or a physician. But, you know, one of the most popular areas for us has always been the market, where children can take on the role of shoppers or workers in a grocery store. We have our fishing pond, which is also a very favorite space where children can pretend to catch and release fish using magnets in a fishing pool.
You could do a sociology experience in the market, just watching parents who are disturbed by the fact that things are out of place. I don't know any parents that might be like that. But.
Well, we are always appreciative of those parents putting everything back in place for us. So we love those parents. But I do think that what I'm always amazed at is even a really young child will know how to behave in a restaurant and be the maitre d' or be the server. To see how observant they really are of the adults in their lives, I think it's, you know, it's pause for all of us to think about that when we're in our own roles in the community, that we are being watched at all times and children are looking up to us for that. So I do think that children love being in this space. I would say this is probably the most loved area of the Magic House.
My daughter wanted to know when the beanstalk was added.
Oh, yeah. So that was part of this expansion, and we actually interviewed children when we were designing this and working with the architect. What would children like to see in the house? And they wanted a turret.
Okay.
They want it to look like a little castle-like. And so we were like, okay, but what would we put in the turret? And we didn't really want to put another circular slide because we had already done that. And we knew about this architectural firm, Lucky. It's called Lucky Architecture. And they create these climbing structures really all over the world. And so we enlisted their help in creating this sculpture, climbing sculpture. So it had to be an integral part of the actual construction of the space because we had to put the pole in before they could put the walls in and things like that. So it took some going back and forth. But luckily we had an architect that was willing to work with us on both sides, and it worked out well. But it is a beloved experience. So this is our World Traveler Gallery, and so this is our latest traveling exhibit space. Below us is the traveling exhibit space where we're either creating exhibits or we're bringing exhibits in. So we're opening Curious George tomorrow. So that's our newest exhibit that'll be here through the summer. And then this exhibit area is exhibits that we always design ourselves. So Argentinos Niños was created with the help of our Argentine community in St. Louis. So they met yesterday as a final wrap up. But it's, you know, an intense relationship when you're working with somebody over the course of 18 months to help bring their culture to life. It's so important for them to have it represented the way they want it seen, and that's what we're trying to do. We want to make sure it's not our perception of the culture, it's the people from the culture, and we're just helping them.
How hard is that to simplify things for a child without watering down that culture?
I know. That is the biggest. And they were saying yesterday that they were very kind all the way along the way, but they kept saying, I don't know, we couldn't understand how you were going to do it. And so they're very happy that we could synthesize it. But it is just a lot of conversations about what they see as important, and then having them help us to develop what the content is going to be. And, you know, they did the translation. So it is interesting, too, because of the different perspectives that people bring. You know, obviously, if we were saying we're going to do an exhibit on the United States, depending where you were brought up, would change the way you would think the focus should go. So it's kind of distilling your own culture down to the basic elements. And we brought in this professional muralist from Argentina. He actually had done a mural in the hotel we were in, and then we, in doing our research, realized that mural art is really important to Argentina. So we had asked him if he would be willing to do artwork and send it to us, and he said, well, I won't hardly charge you anything if you'll pay for my transportation here, because he said, I've always wanted to come to St. Louis. I love music, and I love the St. Louis Blues. You know, at first when he said he liked the St. Louis Blues, we're thinking obviously the hockey, but he meant the music, and he wanted to go to Blueberry Hill and see where Chuck Berry played. And so he came and spent a week with us, and we did not talk to him. We just said we wanted to represent Argentina, but kind of a lot of the iconic images of Argentina that he put in his mural are the same ones represented here. So we were like, okay, that means we got it right, because if somebody who is from the culture is creating artwork and it aligns with what we're doing, you know, we were really proud that we were able to do that. But the committee was fantastic. It really was. And when we created the Kenya exhibit, the Kenyan community here had such pride, and we were starting to work on the India exhibit. I met with a woman yesterday, and she said, this is a once-in-a-lifetime chance for us to bring our culture to life.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.